Welcome to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast for corporate refugees who want to do more of what they love and get paid what they're worth. I'm David Schreiner Kahn, your guide and community builder. Smashing the Plateau is more than just a podcast. We're a platform offering resources, accountability, and camaraderie to high-performing professionals who are making the leap from the corporate career track to entrepreneurial business ownership. If you'd like to learn more about how you can do more of what you love and get paid what you're worth, go to smashingtheplateau.com or email us at info@smashingtheplateau.com.
The most important thing in our business life, especially if you're going to be a solopreneur or starting something new, is who we surround ourselves with. You know, there's that truism of the five people we interact with most influence our life. And it's of those, it's probably going to be your spouse or your partner. That's the one you actually spend the most time with. And so getting that foundation right and having a clear sense of what that's about is probably what's going to make or break you in the business world.
Today's guest is Tim Ash, and in this episode, we dive into the often overlooked relationship between personal connections and business success. Tim reveals how the support and sometimes the challenges from those closest to us can shape our entrepreneurial path. You'll hear eye-opening perspectives on what really makes or breaks your progress as a business owner, and how understanding your own nature and the nature of those around you can help you thrive. Be prepared for fresh ideas and practical takeaways that you can start applying to your business and your life today. Now let's welcome Tim Ash. Tim is an acknowledged authority on evolutionary psychology, persuasion, and digital marketing. He's a sought-after international keynote speaker, executive advisor, and the best-selling author of several books, including Primal Dating, Unleash Your Primal Brain, and Landing Page Optimization. As the CEO and co-founder of a digital optimization agency, Tim helped to create over $1.2 billion.
Billion dollars
in value for leading companies. He's been cited by Forbes as a top 10 online marketing expert and by Entrepreneur Magazine as an online marketing influencer to watch. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, David. Great to be back with you.
Great to have you on again. So the last time you were here on Smashing the Plateau, we talked about the connection between evolutionary psychology and digital marketing.
Yes.
Now you've written a new book on the connection between evolutionary psychology and modern relationships. Well, this new book focuses on relationships and dating, which isn't necessarily the primary focus of entrepreneurs and entrepreneurship.
Fair enough.
It is often, it does come up in, believe it or not, in our community discussions from time to time, because business and life are very much integrated. But when you look specifically from the business perspective about relationships, like relationships are key, and especially for folks who have left corporate to start their own business, especially if they stay in the same discipline, the relationships are really the most important thing for them to actually get their business off the ground and get those first signed contracts. It's really all about relationships. Often it's only about relationships going forward, but then, you know, there are other ways that people get found and attract new clients, but relationships are really key. So I would love to, you know, now that you've done this deep dive on dating, I'd love to hear a little bit about how the non-dating challenges might get dealt with based on your experience and your research and everything you put into the book.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I want to be super clear that even though the main title of the book is Primal Dating, the subtitle is The Unflinching Evolutionary Psychology Guide to Modern Relationships. So what we're really talking about here, 90% of the book is applicable to any kind of relationships, long-term relationships, marriage, and so on. So it's not a dating book. We have some dating tactics in there for sure, but it's really about, it's kind of a, best way I describe it is kind of men are from Mars, women are from Venus, except based on real science. So it's to understand the other gender better. That's really the point of it from an evolutionary perspective.
Great. So thank you for the backdrop. So with that in mind, and what I've said in the introduction, what are your thoughts about once you leave the corporate world and you're on your entrepreneurial journey, what are your thoughts about how you may or may not get support from your most intimate relationships?
Well, as you mentioned, David, the most important thing in our business life, especially if you're going to be a solopreneur or starting something new, is who we surround ourselves with. You know, there's that truism of the five people we interact with most influence our life. And it's of those, it's probably going to be your spouse or your partner. That's the one you actually spend the most time with. And so getting that foundation right and having a clear sense of what that's about is probably what's going to make or break you in the business world. I remember shortly after I made that entrepreneurial leap going from a big company to starting my own business, I was in the entrepreneur organization and we had our monthly meetings in our circle or our group. And probably 70% of the stuff was, okay, I'm having problems with my wife, you know, divorce is coming, or some my business partner tried to screw me out of my money and so on. It was always like the closest, most intimate relationships that were the biggest things. It wasn't the operational side of running the business. So I think that if you don't have your house in order in terms of your partnership and intimate relationship, you're in big trouble.
Right. So what do you need to understand about those people who are close to you? You know, if you have a significant other in your life, then that significant other, what is it you need to understand about them so you can get the support you need for your career?
Well, my brilliant co-author, Limor Gottlieb, and I, when we were writing the book, the goal was to essentially peel back all of the cultural overlays that we have about relationships. We have all these crazy beliefs about how things should be, whether it's the Disney fantasy of Prince Charming or lifelong monogamy and the nuclear family. We wanted to strip it down to look at it from the biology perspective and the evolutionary psychology. And we found a lot of really surprising things, or maybe not so surprising, but things that people don't want to hear. One of the most significant is that as a species, we're not lifelong monogamous. I mean, that's a big truth bomb for a lot of people because they'd rather believe the opposite, you know, the happily ever after, the soulmate, the my one and only, my ride or die, and they build their lives and their businesses and their financial arrangements and the likelihood of divorce on this myth. When in fact, people are not lifelong monogamous. We stick around long enough to have big-headed babies whose brains take 25 years to fully mature, but not for the life, not for exclusivity, where we're both men and women are promiscuous for different reasons under different circumstances. Our jealousy is cranked up to super high to prevent those kind of things, but we still do it. So that's human nature, and that's something that most people don't want to actually deal with.
Yeah, were you surprised to learn that that's human nature?
Well, not really, because I'd written the previous book, as you know, the one I was on talking about last time, Unleash Your Primal Brain. And that was kind of an overview of evolutionary psychology. And I knew that even among our closest great ape cousins, they had different mating strategies. The gorillas, you know, they have one big alpha male and everybody else is sulking in the corner, whereas bonobos are kind of hippie, free love pygmy chimp cousins. They use sex as a way to say hello, to groom each other, to make friends. It's just very promiscuous. And as a result, they're very practical. They're a matriarchal society. You always know who the mother is, not so much the father in those kind of settings. And so there was a wide range in our closest cousins. It's no surprise to me that people aren't monogamous. In fact, only about 3% of mammals are monogamous for life. Most are promiscuous and proudly so. We're kind of in this awkward phase in between. We're monogamish for long-term relationships, but there's always opportunistic ways to be non-monogamous as well. And that's just baked into our DNA.
Okay. Why do you think we have this myth of monogamy?
I think it's a social construct largely. I mean, this idea, you know, we've evolved as humans for 200,000-300,000 years on the plains of East Africa and as we spread out all over the world. But this notion of property and of once we settled down and started farming, which by the way, half the world was still doing hunting gathering till about the 1700s. So this is really, really recent. We start farming and then we start living in towns and big cities. And so what we decided to do was just kind of double down on this myth of property, And so women, in a sense, became property. And that's all these ideas of the patriarchy and so on came along with that. It wasn't what we were designed for. We're designed for groups of a few dozen people on the open plains of Africa. And women actually had a lot more agency in choosing their partners and so on.
Mm. All right. So how does this non-monogamous concept now play into getting support as an entrepreneur?
Well, one is how we structure our businesses. It's just like, I love you. We'll be together forever. You know, so there are no prenuptial agreements. There are no practical ways to disentangle yourself. We might have really, really detailed clauses on how to buy out our business partners when we form the business, but we don't take our spouses into account, for example. That's, I believe, a deadly mistake, because that's actually more likely to happen than breaking up the business partnership. And you need actually, like I said, a strong team to succeed. So another aspect would be to what your roles are in at home. And I don't want to sound super traditional, but you know, people, there's massive asymmetries between men and women. One of the biggest is risk-taking, for example. So you find these weird dynamics where women and men are butting heads in their personal relationships. If the woman is doing better financially than the man, then that can cause problems, because women have essentially evolved men to be risk takers and to audition for them, because they're taking this high risk gamble of picking the most well-resourced man they can to have children with. So what that means is essentially they look down on, subconsciously, very subtly, on men who can't resource as well as them. They will never choose a man voluntarily who's doing worse than them. And that's why there are also a lot of relationship formation problems right now. But if the man starts sliding downhill or moonwalking down to the basement, that's the most likely cause of relationship rupture and divorce, actually. And women initiate about 3/4 of that.
Right. So are there strategies entrepreneurs can use to try to avoid problems based on, again, based on this particular concept?
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, I would strongly suggest, if you don't have them in place already, that you have some explicit ways of dealing with divorce or relationship dissolution with regard to your finances, because the typical default is that one side is going to get most of it in a divorce. And that can be really dangerous, and that can dilute your ownership stake or scuttle your business completely. So the same care you're putting into, again, the business structuring arrangements, if you have partners, you should put into setting up for the possibility of, okay, well, what do I need in the divorce? The business, you don't get any piece of that, for example, might be a thing. I've seen many, many entrepreneurial friends who get divorced and they have forensic accountants going into their company and looking for money they're hiding from their spouse and so on. And that gets really, really ugly. If you just kind of say, hey, divorce is off the table, you can have the house, you know, or rather the business is off the table, you can have the house. That makes things a lot cleaner. So I know that sounds very pessimistic, but again, seeing the likelihood of that happening and what's built into us, I would say you should prepare for it.
Right. So basically what you're saying is the same kind of exit planning or succession planning that we talk about for business owners, we should also do the same thing for our family finances.
Yes. And the likelihood, like I said, the possibility of the relationship ending in the middle of your ongoing business. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about is, you do need a partner. Your chances of actually being a successful entrepreneur are highly correlated with your relationship success. So if you have a partnership, you're more likely to succeed, just like in any business. You know, the small business stats that if you have a second partner in your small business, your five-year chances of success go up about 70%. And three different partners, it goes up 90% over the baseline of just doing it yourself. So it's the same idea. You know, you're doing something that is your highest and best use on your planet, on the planet, and your partner is doing something that's they're contributing inside the business, and so you're much more likely to not ignore things you're bad at. So it's the same thing. And figuring out, again, that division of labor inside of your household is really, really important as well. So having a partner will increase your chances of entrepreneurial success, and you have to have clear role definitions, I would say.
Yeah. One of the things I have seen not so infrequently is someone is doing well with their business. They have a lot of focus on their business. Mm-hmm. They may possibly not have partners in their business, but their relationships with their significant other or spouse is, I'm going to say, kind of tenuous at best.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty common scenario. Do you have any suggestions about what to do? You know, the idea that having a solid relationship in your personal life is going to boost your chances of business success, that kind of triggered my question about if your personal relationship isn't so good, right? Are there things you can do about it once you recognize that if you can improve that, your likelihood of business success will also improve?
Yes. Okay. So one of the big asymmetries between men and women, again, women operate on this principle called hypergamy, which is they're going to lock in their one single best option for a long-term relationship. And so they have to be attracted to you. Yes, that's one axis. But the other is traditionally meant ongoing provisioning. And what that means is it's not just money. And, you know, back in the day, you have to bring home a kill every 2 or 3 days to keep the tribe fed. It's not like you can inspect someone's bank account or the size of their house. There wasn't a settled thing. You just had to show up every day and keep provisioning. But provisioning also has non-resource dimensions. It's how much parenting, emotional kind of involvement in the relationship, and so on. So I think, you know, and I went through this personally, I paid too much attention to my business and it caused problems in my marriage and with my kids. You can't have it all. And if you focus too much on your business and ignore, again, the foundation of it back in the house, you have to pay attention to your spouse and you have to make sure that if it's your wife, in my case, that the provisioning is happening on an emotional level as well as the financial level.
Right, right. Are there specific mindset adjustments that you think both genders need to make to improve connections?
Yes, but it's not universal advice because one of the premises of the book is that men and women are radically different. We have complementary needs, but if we could do everything that the other gender does for us, we're interchangeable. We don't really need each other. And we do have very deep needs, but they're asymmetric. And they're also different by life stage. So what people need, you know, young women versus older women, young men versus older men, it's actually a crossover in terms of our desirability in the mating market and what we bring to the party. So there are massive asymmetries in terms of the two genders and the life stages. It's not as simple as saying, like, what's this universal advice I could give someone? I could give you, if you want, a couple of ideas for men and for women, if that would be helpful.
Yeah, please.
So for men, the key realization, if we get, again, this idea of like your value in the relationship marketplace crosses over at about 30. Women start super high and drops the rest of their life. Men start slow and peaks around 50 with a flat peak around 40 to 60. So the strategies are different. So for men, the strategy is keep leveling up. You have to work for your power and desirability. And again, that's not a surprise to any entrepreneurs because male entrepreneurs do much of what they do in a sense, deep down to get optionality with women. That's why we do this, to have that worldly success. So don't get distracted. Don't play Fortnite in your mom's basement, you know, when you're 30. Go try something. Go beat your head against the wall. And you can't ignore this. Also become attractive to women. And I know that's kind of weird and counterintuitive, but you can't, there are plenty of rich guys that can't find a good mate because they essentially have no game. And I'm not talking about pickup artist tricks. I'm just saying you have to practice approaching women, getting rejected by women, entering into relationships, exiting relationships. You need to put in that practice time in both the provisioning side and what kind of lifestyle you're creating that would be attractive, as well as how to be an attractive person in a sense and a good partner in a relationship. For women, the strategy is actually different. My co-author Lemoore and I talked about this, and I actually came out more on the feminist side, but the reality is you can't have it all. So right now, women are being sold this lie that you can be the boss babe and sexy and a good mother and so they're told to down with the patriarchy, prioritize your career first, don't be financially dependent on men. But you have to realize there is a trade-off for that. From 20 to 40, that's when your desirability in terms of being able to attract a mate drops the fastest. It's during your fertility years, because again, having human children requires a lot of caretaking for many, many years until they become viable. So if you're going to find a mate as a man, you're going to prefer younger, more fertile women. And that, you know, there's obvious physical cues for that. But the point is, if it's career or relationship, the smart strategy is actually to lock in the relationship first with the highest quality man you can. And if that doesn't work out or whatever, as a plan B or in parallel or afterwards, you can still have a career. There's nothing, you haven't gotten dumber, you've gotten smarter, you've gotten more experience, but that opportunity to get into a high quality relationship may have passed you by. And that's that biological clock that we talk about. The crossover point, like I said, is about 30 when women start underperforming men. And then by middle age, it gets to be a pretty big gap. Men have this permanent advantage over women at that point on average.
Right. Tim, what happens in relationships that are not male-female?
You know, we didn't talk about that in the book. It's because there's not, evolutionary psychology is already a broad enough, vague enough field that we can say certain things about men and women's asymmetries, but we didn't really address that because there's not enough evidence or data to support anything about non-binary relationships.
Okay, fair enough. You mentioned you were involved in an entrepreneurs organization.
Yes.
I'm curious to know how, you know, we've talked about business, we've talked about your personal life. I'm curious about how your relationship in business communities might play out, or you might use some of the strategies that you have unearthed in your book because of these biological differences between men and women.
Okay. Well, that's a great question. I'd say in my day, the San Diego chapter of the Entrepreneurs Organization was probably about 90% men. Mm-hmm. And I actually don't think that's going to change. Most executive organizations, unless they're specifically for women, are men heavy. And there's and what I realized is that the main thing from an evolutionary perspective, the difference between men and women isn't on average anything. It's the shape of those bell curves. On average, we're the same, but men have wider bell curves. Women are more tightly clustered on any dimension. So that means men are more cowards among men and more heroes. There are more geniuses and a lot more idiots among men. That's that same genetic idea of men have to roll the dice to be attractive to women. And sometimes suboptimal stuff happens. You know, we're taking our chances. Sometimes it's snake eyes, you know. And so men are going to be more aggressive. And remember, again, their motivation for getting optionality is success in the entrepreneurial world. What that also means is that they're always going to grind harder because that's their only way to get that optionality. So there's the wage gap. You know, you hear about that 70% women get paid on average compared to men. Some of that is due to stepping onto the mommy track on the part of women. But a lot of it is due just because men have no other way to get into good relationships. So they're going to be there burning the midnight oil. So I'd say the thing that I realized is that men are going to cluster into more aggression, essentially, and entrepreneurs are on the extreme sports side of that, I would say. They're the ones that are willing to take the most risk. So one of the things that I think is needed is some kind of training for women partners of men who are entrepreneurs to get comfortable with that amount of risk, because it really is high wire act without a net. And I think most women don't really know what they're getting into if they're signing up for an entrepreneur relationship.
And what about for women who are CEOs? Certainly lots of solopreneurs are women.
Yes.
And I know, for example, in our community, it's pretty mixed in terms of gender. Do you have any thoughts or suggestions about how women versus men just might approach their involvement in community and what they also hope to gain from community?
Yes. And by the way, I have a son and a daughter, and I want the best for each of them. And I'm rooting for that. And you know, right now, 60% of college degrees awarded in the U.S. are to women. Women in large cities are outperforming men until they decide to have a kid financially. You know, there's other statistics that say that women on boards of directors, as you know, is highly correlated with more successful corporate performance. So women bring a lot to the party, and I don't want to mischaracterize that in any way. The one thing that I would say is that there's still that tendency to cluster and minimize risk. So when you get a group of men, that's going to amplify risk. When you get a group of women together, and I've seen, and my dear friends are in a lot of women's executive organizations, it tends to actually minimize risk. So I'm not sure that all women or all men environments are a good idea. That's the bottom line. So I know there's a lot of
interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, the Athena groups and other like female executive organizations, as you're aware of. Yes, you need that to kind of climb the ladder, break through the glass ceiling. But at the same time, to rely exclusively on that, I think on the part of women is a mistake, because getting calibrated to the kind of rough and tumble aggression of a man's approach is really, really important, I think, for women executives to succeed. So I wouldn't necessarily spend all of my time in women-only executive spaces or entrepreneurial spaces. So that would be my advice.
Great advice. Tim, we've covered a lot of territory in a relatively short amount of time. First of all, congratulations again on I'm getting the new book out. Is there anything else you want to mention before we close out?
Yeah, I'd say the reason that Limor and I wrote this book was to really help people deal with relationships reality-based. And I keep mining evolutionary psychology for that, because it's basically the operating system for all human behavior. And so I would say that dig into our true nature and set aside your cultural overlays as much as possible, whatever your cherished beliefs, whether they're religious or social or wherever they came from, and look at the reality. And that's going to make all of your decisions better and probably lead to more happiness in your life.
Great advice. Tim, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us again on Smashing the Plateau and share some great insights. My guest today has been expert in evolutionary psychology, Tim Ash. Thank you, Tim, for joining us.
My pleasure. And you can find details about the book at primaldating.com. Or if you're interested in my executive advisory, of course, just go to timash.com.
Yes, I forgot to ask you that. So thank you for mentioning that. Tim, thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure, David. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode of Smashing the Plateau. Our mission is empowering people like you to do more of what you love and get paid what you're worth. Help us spread the message that you can connect passion with profit. Please share this episode with a friend, share it on LinkedIn, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. I wish you much success in smashing your plateau. See you on our next episode.